fluffy bread,
classic burger buns,
and so many carbs. Carb fear is real.
But Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, zero sugar, and seriously, great taste. Plus, more of the dietary fiber and protein you want with no compromise. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout.
We made this.
Welcome to Podcast 616, a podcast all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe for the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host, Tony Black, and today we will be diving into the first Marvel Cinematic Universe big screen release since July 2019, Kate Shortland's long-delayed Black Widow. Scarlett Johansson stars as Natasha Romanoff, who met her demise on the planet Vormir during Avengers Endgame in the battle to save the universe from Thanos, the Mad Titan. Black Widow takes us back to the year 2016, just after the events of Captain America: Civil War, as an on-the-run Natasha is reunited with her dysfunctional Russian family as she works to take down the sinister Red Room once and for all and wipe the red from her ledger. And joining me to pick through this latest entry is Dan Owen, editor and writer for framerated.co.uk. Welcome to Podcast 616 for the first time, Dan. So this is exciting.
Yeah, it's my first time on this podcast. I'm slowly getting through quite a few different podcasts. I'm appearing on quite a few, so this is good. I've got like a bingo card and I'm kind of ticking them off.
You'll get the full scorecard eventually.
One day.
No, it's really nice to have you on. I mean, I'm a fairly irregular Podcast 616 host/guest myself. So I just pop up from time to time, and there's lots of other podcasters who jump in and talk Marvel. But I really wanted to talk about Black Widow because it's the first movie we've had. They've been keeping us busy with the TV shows, you know, WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Loki, which have all been good in their various different ways. But there's nothing quite like an MCU movie, you know, at various points in the year. So it's great to have them back on the big screen. So I thought, you know, I need to come and do this one, which we've been waiting for a while. So I suppose let's talk a little bit about what we thought about it. You know, what did we make of the movie itself? I mean, would you give it, let's give it a ranking out of 10. So Dan, did you enjoy Black Widow overall?
I did really. I'd give it out of 10. I'm looking at like a 7. 7, I think, is probably fair. It wasn't great, it wasn't amazing. It was kind of mid-tier kind of Marvel for me. Had some good elements, some bad elements. Very bit of a mixed bag. I can imagine it maybe dropping slightly if I watched it again. It's one of those kind of films where I've got a feeling that once the novelty of certain things has worn off a bit, and you're watching it for different reasons, you know, in the future, you might think, oh, maybe it's not a 7, maybe it's more of a 6. It might drop a little bit, but it might go up even. Possibly, but I don't know. But at this moment in time, for a cinema experience, it was kind of like a good 7.
I would probably agree, I think, yeah. I'd say I would probably give it more than about 7 out of 10. You know, some people like to rank number-wise, some people don't. I don't mind. I'm happy to rank and put a scale on it, and I would say a 7. I thought it was solid. You know, people talk about the whole mid-tier Marvel thing, don't they? online, and... And I think it was just under mid-tier for me. And that's not to say that when I did my ranking, not to say it's bad, because it really isn't. I enjoyed this perfectly well. But I realised, oh no, when I was putting it on a ranking of all the films, I was like, no, it's not better than that one. It's not better than that. And it just kept slipping a little bit. So it's perfectly decent, but it's not going to trouble my top 10 Marvel, I think, for, you know, for various reasons. And I don't know, did we expect this? Did we expect it to be a solid, you know, workman-like Marvel movie, or were we expecting a little bit more from this one?
Well, I was expecting a decent film, and I think that's what we got. Yeah, it was kind of... I think it kind of helped that we've been waiting 2 years for this. So it kind of was just nice to be in the cinema and watching a big MCU, big-budget film again. This is my first film I've watched in the cinema since Tenet. So it's been quite a while for me. It's been nearly a year. But Black Widow, you know, Natasha Romanoff, it's not many people's favourite character. So that probably didn't help in that sense. But I was kind of open to finding out more about her and things. And I thought the film did a good job of that. So, yeah, but like you say, once you kind of compare it to other films, you tend to be comparing to films that have got characters that you maybe prefer, or the film itself was kind of playing into the larger, bigger picture kind of thing with Marvel. So it kind of meant more, or it had more kind of surprises or links to other things, or setting up future events, and there was maybe a bit more to it in that sense. But this was very standalone. I wouldn't say generic, maybe that's a bad term, but it was kind of just a straightforward standalone film. You know, it gave a bit of extra kind of background to Natasha herself and things, introduced some new people who were clearly going to be used in the future, I'd have thought. But yeah, but in many ways, middle of the road, you know.
What's your relationship generally with Marvel movies? Are you much of a comics guy? Are you someone who's just come to the MCU? Did you enjoy some of the random sort of Marvel films beforehand?
Well, I'm not a comic book reader at all. For me, it was, Blade, I suppose. It was the first kind of big Marvel thing before the MCU. So Iron Man and stuff, you know, when that all came in, my interest was kind of piqued a little bit by that. And so I've kind of just grown with it, with the MCU itself. Yeah, I'm not one of those people who've kind of got an encyclopedic knowledge of all these characters or anything going back years and years and all that kind of stuff. For me, it's just, I've just enjoyed the MCU. It was a bit shaky early on, maybe. But once you got to the Avengers kind of film, I think that sold a lot of people on the whole idea of what they were trying to do and what they were trying to build. And then from there, it just kind of got better and better, really, hasn't it? And recently with the big kind of Avengers films with Thanos, it's kind of taken on a whole other meaning, really, isn't it, in culture. It's like a really big deal. So maybe to the detriment of lots of other films, but that's another argument and debate. Overall, I like the MCU. You know, a lot of people do criticize it for various reasons, but I think they're kind of good, entertaining films. They're well made for the most part. I don't think there's ever been one that's a outright stinker. You know, I even quite enjoyed Thor: The Dark World at the time, to be honest. For me, they've all been entertaining blockbusters. You know, if I'd have been like a teenager when these were coming out, this would be like heaven for me. You know, if these had happened in the 90s. But even as a 40-year-old plus, they've been entertaining. I've enjoyed them.
Oh yeah, I genuinely put the experience of seeing Endgame in a cinema as one of my favourite experiences. The atmosphere was amazing. It was like being appropriately as we record, a European Cup final, Championship final. Like it was, you know, it was like being an England fan at Wembley, because it was the cathartic payoff to 10 plus years of this Marvel stuff, and it was a joy. It was absolutely a joy. And I mean, I agree. I think they are really enjoyable. I don't think they very often make a bad movie. You know, there's loads of arguments about how they're all quite, you know, similar or them. And I don't subscribe to a lot of those arguments. I think they're made by people who have just got a little bit of a bee in their bonnet, that because they're these massive big blockbusters and they're, you know, not these kind of niche indie films that are really profound, that they have a go at them. And I'm not that kind of person. I'm like, just lay off. They're perfectly fun. They're good. They're often good. They recruit good filmmakers to make these movies. I mean, you know, we're going to be doing the Thor movies next year in the run-up to the new Thor movie, Love and Thunder. So we'll do The Dark World again. which it is probably pretty much at the bottom for a lot of people. But it'll be interesting to go back and look at those and then look at the people who made them. You know, Kenneth Branagh, you know, Taika Waititi, you know, they get these really good filmmakers in to make all of these films. And I think, and in this case, they hired Kate Shortland, who is, you know, not in any way a major blockbuster kind of making movie director. You know, she's made quite low budget, you know, Australian film director, made quite low budget movies, things like Somersault Law, which was where Scarlett Johansson saw her and thought she'd be a good fit for this. So they bring in, I mean, you know, next up with Eternals, we've got Chloe Zhao, who's just made Nomadland and won the Oscar, you know, and that film looks gorgeous from the trailers, mm-hmm. Eternals. So they are absolutely engaging both with populism and, you know, this mass entertainment, and also with actual really well creative people. And I think for the most part, those creative people are given the freedom to do what they need to do and shine. So, yeah, Marvel haters, back off. Well, you're not listening to this podcast anyway because you don't like Marvel. So anyone listening to this is probably in agreement with me. But I just think, yeah, the thing with Black Widow, I suppose, is that even despite those aspects, it is fairly workmanlike. And I think that's why it's not necessarily going to hit the heights of a Black Panther or a Thor Ragnarok. You know what I mean? That kind of thing.
And also, it's just a strange choice, isn't it, to launch Phase 4 of the MCU with a prequel film? It seems a bit strange to me to be looking backwards like that. It seems a bit odd, especially after, obviously, the peak of kind of Endgame. It's kind of starting in a strange place, really, isn't it? By going backwards in time, you'd have thought they'd have forged forward kind of thing. But this does feel like a kind of film where they felt a bit sorry maybe that they hadn't done it before. So for Scarlett Johansson, they kind of said, well, okay, come on board as an executive producer and you can do your solo film. And it's a bit like almost like an apology for her, yeah. to kind of like, we'll do this, don't worry, it will come after you've died, you know, on screen, but never mind about that. This will, I suppose, that's fair enough, because the Star Wars prequels were kind of doing the backstory to Darth Vader, and he died, hadn't he? So you know, that's a fine enough thing to do. It just seems a bit strange. I maybe wouldn't have done it that way. But I suppose in the future, people, when they're doing their binge watching of these films, they might possibly watch this one between Civil War,
yeah,
and in Infinity War,
absolutely,
and just maybe don't watch the end credit scene, which would massively spoil Endgame.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Actually, I did think that at the time. I thought people will definitely watch this in the wake of Civil War. Because it's a weird one, isn't it? Because it's almost like an interquel, if you like. You know, it's not a full prequel because it's not completely the childhood story of Natasha in the Red Room and all that. They deal with all that very quickly. They deal with that in the credits. And then it takes place in the wake of Civil War, in that space where Natasha's on the run and we haven't seen her for a little bit. And I can't remember if she crops up in anything after Civil War and before Infinity War. My instinct is that she doesn't. I don't think she's in anything in that two-year gap. So they do they do have the space here. But I mean, I personally think this film should have been made then, you know, and actually been made at that time, because it is, you know, the whole production of this as a big history. They wanted to make a Black Widow film going as far back as 2004. There were multiple drafts made, written. David Hayter, who wrote the X-Men films, the first two X-Men films, he wrote, I think, either a treatment or a script in 2004 before the MCU, and he talked about how he wanted to make it very much about nuclear weapons and the, you know, the post-Soviet fallout from the end of the Cold War and Natasha in the Red Room and that kind of thing. So that would have been a much more traditional prequel story, I think, and it would have been Cold War set potentially, or just after the Cold War. And I think it would have been a very different Natasha. But the reason that didn't happen was because at the time there were films being made with female stars, action movies such as Tomb Raider, Aeon Flux, Blood Rain, that bombed at the box office. Some of them did anyway, or didn't do as well. I think it might have been The Cradle of Life which didn't do as well in Tomb Raider terms. So these films were not capturing audiences. So that it was shelved. It was canned. Which I think it's a shame, because I think you could well imagine, couldn't you, an Angelina Jolie in this kind of role with a Russian accent in a spandex suit at that time.
Well, but Salt. I think, you need to watch Salt.
Well, no, don't watch Salt, please. Anyone, don't watch Salt.
Oh, I like Salt. I like Salt.
Did you?
Well, I don't want to go too far off track, but Salt's an interesting film because there's three different versions of that film. There's three different cuts. So it all depends on which version you watch. Most people who don't like it watch the theatrical version.
It's a different conversation.
But if you watch the director's cut and try to forget that you never saw the theatrical one, that's so much better.
Okay.
So definitely, okay. I recommend people go back and watch that director's cut. Yeah.
I will, because I came out of Salt thinking it was rubbish. Anyway, way off topics.
Wait, sorry, yeah.
But no, it's a good point, though, because Angelina Jolie and those kind of actors were making those kind of films around that time. So Black Widow might have been, you know, it would have been a different movie because it wouldn't have been so interlaced with the MCU as this is. Because obviously this... Did you think that this film just... wouldn't make a lot of sense, or wouldn't make as much sense to anyone who doesn't necessarily know what Thunderbolt Ross is talking about and all this kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. I really don't know what percentage of people are watching these films now who've never seen any other MCU film. I think it's pretty comfortably at 99% of people have got some knowledge of Black Widow, or they've seen some Avengers films by now. But for the few who maybe think, oh, this is like a standalone one, I like the people involved in this, I'll go along and watch it, and they don't know much, then I think they could maybe get through it and they can understand the basics of it. But there's definitely a few areas where you're thinking, what's going on? What's this about? Because maybe the jump forward in time after it opens in the mid-90s and then it kind of jumped forwards in time, and you now see the adult Natasha being hounded by General Ross. So I suppose if you'd never seen any of these films, you might think this is him still chasing her in adulthood for the same reasons as the 90s scenes. You might have that thought in your head, whereas actually she's being chased because of the Sokovia Accords, and it all ties into Avengers Age of Ultron and things. Maybe you wouldn't get that, and you'd be slightly kind of thrown for a loop with exactly what's going on and how you know. But I think generally you'd kind of get it, and but it'd be very strange to be watching this, wouldn't it, as your first introduction to the MCU?
Yeah, because it's a weird kind of good. It's a goodbye without necessarily tipping its hat too much that it is a goodbye. Really, I mean, I fully thought that you would get some sort of bookending thing where almost like they sort of suggested in the trailer for this, where you would see Natasha on Voromir where she's dead or she's dying. And it would almost be a bit of a like, okay, well, we go back now, and then I don't know. I really, because that's sort of the trailer. I'm sure the trailer did that kind of thing where you had a voiceover from Natasha saying, "I've done this in my life, I've had this in my life," and I thought the film might do something similar where it just reminds the audience. Oh, by the way, yeah, she's dead, she's dying, but this is going to take us back and tell the story that should have been told 5 or 6 years ago. But it doesn't do that at all.
Yeah. It could have actually. Have all taken place in her mind as she was falling off that cliff, maybe. So just before she hits the ground, her life is literally flashing before her eyes, and that's this film's sort of thing, maybe. But they didn't do that.
Maybe they thought that was too cheesy, or...
Yeah. That's why I thought of it.
It would... Or it would require too much knowledge of Endgame and things. But again, though, who's watching this who hasn't seen Endgame? You know, that's what gets me. It's like if you're gonna go full bore with this interconnected universe, then don't worry about things like that anymore. Just properly indulge, because this film really is an indulgence. It doesn't really, in many ways, it doesn't need to be made. It doesn't. It should have been made 5-6 years ago, because the character has always deserved her own standalone movie. So I'm not saying that shouldn't have been there, or at least standalone TV series. But I don't. It is still an indulgence, given that the character was killed off. So it's a weird disjunct. It's a movie that because it's tonally and even visually really in line with Civil War. They use the same font, you know, to describe where places are. It's got a similarish kind of score, not the same composer, but a similarish kind of score. It's dealing with similar kinds of themes. You know, it's dealing with the fallout of a sort of post-Soviet. It's conditioning, psychological warfare, all these kind of things. It really does feel like the in step with that those last two Captain America movies. So, you know, why didn't they just not make this in 2017? You know, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I can only imagine it's just purely scheduling, you know, and they just had their big run, hadn't they, to get towards Endgame,
yeah.
And they had to achieve that, and doing this film, making this film, would just be too much of a distraction. But you're right, you know, there should have been two Black Widow films, you could argue. You needed one to introduce her as a character before Avengers, so we properly know what she's all about, and then you needed Black Widow 2 after Civil War to, you know, and because this film, like you were saying earlier, it kind of sandwiches together two things, isn't it? Because it kind of deals with her backstory as such before the end credits are over, and then it kind of does a sequel to that in a sense. So it kind of has, it kind of sort of smushes together two film ideas in a way. And yeah, and there's no real purpose to it, because like you say, at the end, her character is now dead. She's not coming back. There's no magical reset button of any kind by the end. Like somebody might have expected that to happen, maybe, but that doesn't happen. So there's ultimately no point beyond the fact that we've introduced a few new characters. And that's one of the strange things with this film, really, is that when I was watching it, I felt that the Black Widow character herself was kind of slightly pushed into the background in favour of her sister and her dad, really, who both might return in future films. So it seemed like the screenplay was a bit more interested in the new characters than it is Natasha herself.
I think that I've seen that written about, I think, somewhere else as well, about how it feels oddly not about her, partly, as you know, as much as anything else. And I think
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
That may be understandable, but that's also where I think the film would have been a bit different had it been made, had it been properly scheduled from, like, you know, if they're operating on like a 10-year plan or whatever, if they'd have gone after Avengers Assemble and gone, right, well, we've done Thor, we've done Cap, we've done Tony, we've done the Hulk, right, let's do a Black Widow movie. And they'd have scheduled it for 2016, say, to come after Civil War. I think you would have had a slightly different film, in that I think it would have been... I think that they've missed a massive trick here, not doing the whole Hawkeye stuff properly, because they've talked about that for years, the Red Ledger, the Budapest, all this stuff. That was a good joke. That's actually sidebar, but that is one of the things I did really like about this film, the self-knowing mockery of Scarlett Johansson. And whether this is her or whether this is the writers, but, you know, you've got Elena doing the whole hair flick thing, you know, and the pose. You're such a poser,
yeah,
you know, and the,
yeah,
and Budapest, you know, and the fact that Natasha suddenly loves Moonraker, you know, all of these things. Like, they seem quite self-knowing, and Marvel is always quite self-knowing. But I did quite like that it's actually not unafraid to take the piss a little bit out of the way Scarlett Johansson played this.
Yeah, well, but the thing is that there's not really much to the Black Widow character as presented in the MCU. So there's only really a few things you can pick on. So it's like, yeah, her stance and her superhero poses and that kind of thing. And the Budapest thing, it's like a running joke for a while. But there's not really a lot there, is there, really? So this film is like supposed to be giving us all that meat on the bone. But yeah, even though those moments were funny, I did feel that, like, okay, they're like a tongue-in-cheek references to things and jokes about her character and her personality, but we haven't really discovered much more about her, really, beyond the fact that we now know her family and that, which I did enjoy that. So I liked the themes here with like the Avengers are basically like her new family, and they're going through a divorce at the time, in a sense, with them splitting in half, and in the middle of that happening, she's now kind of brought back and reunited with her old family, in Russia. So I quite like that kind of family theme and meeting her, you know, parents in inverted commas and sister. But I don't know if we really learned much more about her as a person. You know, we kind of already knew that she'd been brainwashed earlier on, and she's kind of moved on since then and went to America again and became an Avenger. We didn't really find out much more about her, so maybe that was a missed opportunity.
Is this where then do we think that maybe they should have integrated Hawkeye a bit more into this film? Because obviously Hawkeye is in Civil War. You don't see him in Infinity War, and then he comes back in Endgame, and he's going to get his own TV show next year. And, you know, we'll talk about it later, but the post-credits scene sort of hints a bit about that. So, you know, could they have found a way to integrate this story with Natasha's family into the whole red leather Budapest thing that has been talked about for ages, that Hawkeye was really involved with? You know, you get at one point, don't you, where Elena says, "What bullets did that?" And Natasha says, "Oh no, they're arrows." And that's very much a reminder that, yeah, they had a fight in here, and they were, but it's all just told in dialogue. You know, we learn all about it. We learn about how it was about Dracov and his daughter, and all, and that's the dark thing that she was carrying, and all this. And it's like, fine, but why didn't you ever show us that? That would have been a really good story show how tormented she was by this, and how. But you never really got that feeling, did you? You know, it was kind of just too much in the background, I think, in a way.
Yeah. You could have thrown in maybe a flashback with Jeremy Renner involved, possibly. Yeah. I don't think it would have been a good idea to have him in the film, because it might have felt like, you know, even though we're doing like a solo film for a female character, we still need to have like a kind of sidekick male that everyone already knows. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe they wanted this to stand alone as like, this is her film, 100%. We're not going to have Jeremy Renner or anybody else like as a sidekick or anything like that. It's just going to be entirely focused on her. So I understand that. So maybe it would have been fun to do a little bit of a flashback, very briefly, but it didn't really bother me, to be honest. And to be honest, I think the whole Budapest thing has been a strange running joke that I'm not particularly interested in, to be honest. I just accepted, okay, they've had some kind of funny adventure in the past and they reference it and it's a bit of a little joke. I don't really need to know what all that was about or anything. That's kind of like a bit of a fan thing, isn't it, to want to see that.
Yeah, I suppose you're right, actually, because I often think about how there are often things in these popular universes that I say, please don't ever explain that. Please, just let that be mysterious. Let that be something, you know. I mean, the classic one is the Clone Wars, isn't it, in Star Wars now? Everyone back when you know, Ben Kenobi was talking about that, it was all interesting. And then when he actually does it, it's a bit like, oh, really? Is that it? You know? And it never really, it never really lives up to it, does it?
Yeah. And what really could it be anyway, this Budapest thing? I mean, it will never be anything particularly interesting. They had a mission in Budapest. It's like, it happens. Yeah. I don't really understand what was going to happen. I mean, it seemed they just spent some time together in an enclosed space playing noughts and crosses. So, great, you know. And I don't understand how anybody lost a game of noughts and crosses. If you look at that, somebody actually lost. How do you lose? if you're an adult, you should never lose a game of tic-tac-toe.
No,
for our American listeners.
Is that what it's called in America? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Tic-tac-toe. Yeah. It takes some doing, doesn't it? All I can imagine is that one of them was, you know, very wounded, very injured, and their faculties weren't quite there. Yeah, maybe. But no, you make a good point there, I think. Maybe it is one of those things that it is better not having seen. But I don't know, I feel like the film wants to have its cake and eat it with that. I think it feels like it wants to explain that. But at the same time, it's trying to tell a different story because it's trying not to be too much of a prequel, yet it still is a bit of a prequel. And it's sort of got its foot in both camps. It feels like it's really trying to wrap up everything about Black Widow that we knew or had been suggested in this film, so then we can forget about her. Like, right, she's done, you know, all done.
Yeah,
Let's move on, you know?
Yeah. It does kind of, it's a strange mood, isn't it, at the end of the film? Because I thought the film ends on a natural place where it does like a kind of heroic shot of Black Widow.
Yeah.
If you remember that shot. And it seemed like it should end there. And then you have this silly scene with her meeting up with her, what's he called? Her kind of supplier.
That bloke we've never seen before yet.
Rick Mason. Rick Mason, okay. Apparently his name.
Right.
So he comes back in, doesn't he? Gives her a new kind of craft to fly off in. And it was like, okay, that seemed to really kill the ending to me. It seemed not a very good way to end her story, if you like. So a bit odd how it ended.
I think, is it to tie up with Infinity War, because she's got a different do at that point? So
yeah.
Are they trying to just... But you don't need that, do you?
Like,
you're totally right. End it on that hero shot there. And then yeah. Credits, and then you've got your post-credit. 100%. I entirely agree. It was a weird extra scene. That was an example of where it's it's the fan fiction thing at work, isn't it? Of, right, we've got to tie everything up. Everything's got to connect, you know? And
yeah.
I think that's the balance. That's the balance. Yes, you know, lean into the connectivity of the universe, but... It doesn't have to be quite as explicit, so you get a really sort of dead end, you know, because it was. I thought it was really flat. I was like, oh, right. Plus the fact, who's this guy? Who is this Rick guy? Like, we've never seen him before. You know, you're supposed
it's really,
you know,
random. Yeah.
It's random. I mean, what if that's where maybe if that had been Hawkeye, or if that had been, I don't know, Tony Stark or whatever, you know, it might have made more sense. It might have been a little bit more of an impact if you've got somebody that we recognise in the audience.
Yeah, it would have actually made more sense maybe being Hawkeye. But it was a bit odd. But maybe he's an essential character that in Phase 4 you're going to return to. and you'll think, oh, right, we didn't think much of him at the time, but he's an integral part of the whole thing.
Maybe. He does have a scene with Elena. There's a brief moment with him and Elena and you know, where they have a bit of sparky stuff. So maybe he'll crop up when you get Black Widow 2 or... You know, Elena gets her own show or whatever happens. But, you know, we'll talk about that later. But yeah, I think it does an interesting thing. I thought...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I mean, what do you think about like the stylistics of it then? Because I don't know about you, I really thought this film owed a big debt to Mission Impossible Fallout in many different scenes. Mm.
Particularly
the stuff in Budapest where they're on the bike, the free falling sequence where, you know, Natasha has to put a parachute on Elena because she's knocked out. And the composer, it's the same composer, Lorne Balfe, who did amazing work on Fallout. I thought his score for that is a masterpiece, and this is a good score. I've listened to it a couple of times. Very similar though. I don't know if you felt that. I certainly got that.
I didn't actually pay much attention to the soundtrack. It didn't stand out to me, to be honest. But I'm one of those kind of people that, unless it's like a really hooky kind of theme, I don't often notice the music so much when I'm watching a film. I kind of like have to watch it in isolation afterwards, or if it's a particularly good track, you know, that really stands out. But I didn't pick up on much of the music, to be honest, on first viewing. But yeah, you're right. There's definitely lots of influences there. I even thought about GoldenEye with James Bond in the tank. I thought that was quite similar to Taskmaster chasing them around in his kind of armoured truck or whatever it was. So there's a few little things, but I suppose you're always going to get that, aren't you? There's so many of these kind of spy films and stuff nowadays. They're all taking inspiration from each other to varying degrees. Definitely there was some Fallout inspiration, I think, around the place. And lots of G.I. Joe, actually. I always get a G.I. Joe film from these films.
I don't think I've seen those, the G.I. Joe movies, so I wouldn't have picked up on that. Yeah. In fairness, Fallout itself is very inspired by Christopher Nolan, I think. So, you know, it all tracks, you know, in various different ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean that's not a negative. I mean I think Fallout's an amazing movie. So if any film is sort of taking a cue from that, I don't mind. And I thought visually there were some good sequences in this. I thought there was some decent, well mounted set pieces. You know, I like the prison breakout for Red Guardian for Alexei. I thought that was good. I liked. Yeah. I just liked the almost the comedy of triggering an avalanche. That's bonkers. That's good bonkers. You know.
That was good.
I enjoyed those things.
Yeah, it was definitely some good set pieces and stuff. I'm never quite sure with Marvel nowadays how much the director's involved with that. Because I don't know if you remember, but some months ago now, I think it was a Twitter post or something went a bit viral, where it was basically saying that the pre-viz team for these films very much handle the action sequences, and they kind of have it almost ready before the film's even started shooting as such. Because they already know kind of roughly what they want the set pieces to be in the films once the script's been kind of done. So they're already set to work doing all that. So apparently some of the directors who haven't got much background in action, they're always kind of convinced to come on to Marvel because Marvel say, well, you don't really need to worry about that. We'll kind of do the action for you. You just have to care about the actors and the story and all that kind of stuff, and we'll handle all that. So I'm never too sure how much to credit the directors with any of the action in these films. But I have heard that certain directors do get very much involved. I think James Gunn kind of pushed back on that viral tweet, and he said, "Well, actually, I'm very involved and stuff," which is fair enough, you know. And I'm sure they obviously have input and change things as they see fit. But yeah, for directors who are not well versed in action, you know, I think they get a helping hand. So I think a little bit of a shout out goes out to the pre-viz team, who never get much discussion online about these films, but they probably deserve a bit of kudos for that. But yeah, these are good films for the action, and they're always quite entertaining.
Well, it's interesting though you talk about that, because that was something that apparently was a problem for one of the approach directors. So there was a few directors who were in the mix for this, people like, all of whom were the kind of art housey kind of people, a bit like Chloe Zhao, Amarasanta got far. The late Lynn Shelton was considered as well. And there was one called Lucretia Martel, who's an Argentine filmmaker. But she was discouraged from doing it because she was told, apparently, this is what she says, that don't worry about the action sequences. And I think that's what that put her off. And that's exactly kind of what you're saying, in that I think Kevin Feige and his team, they already have an idea, I think, of some of the beats for some of these movies they want to hit. And then the director has to work around those, which, I understand the problem that some people have with that, in that it prevents a true auteur from making their mark. But then, like you say, I think the Guardians movies are very James Gunn, you know, and I think, you know, the Thor Ragnarok and Love and Thunder are very Love and Thunder we haven't seen, but we know it's very Taika Waititi. So I feel like surely, with some of these directors, maybe the directors who make the most impact, that balance is definitely there.
Yeah. I think it's really the only way they can make these films as often as they do, really, because you're getting like two or three a year now, aren't you? So I think the way that it works, obviously I'm not involved, but I'm imagining the way it works is that they have to do this, because otherwise, if you literally just gave a film and it was pretty much a blank slate for every director, it's going to take them a long time to come up with these action sequences and design them and things. You kind of need a dedicated team, like you have a dedicated team for VFX, you know, to go in and do all that. So it makes sense in how they crank out so many of these films, that they've got that kind of a conveyor belt feel to how it's made. But I'm sure they do allow the directors to look at what they've come up with and make changes as they see fit and stuff. And I'm sure James Gunn is, some of the more higher profile directors maybe are allowed, you know, to come in maybe at the very start and have more of a say. I'm sure that maybe happens, but I'm sure also there's lots of directors who kind of are quite keen on getting involved in these films, but they don't really have much of an interest in the action possibly, and so they're quite happy that's kind of taken care for them, and they can literally just watch the previews and go, yeah, that looks good, let's go with that, and I'll just concentrate on getting good performances out of the actors and keeping the story focused and all the other things that come with being a director. So I'm sure it works well for people. Obviously, they get involved with people. So I'm sure it's a good working dynamic.
Well, I think people sometimes assume that just because a director maybe for these kind of things isn't involved in every aspect of this action production and the visual effects, that it's a detriment to them as a director or them as the film. But you might be right there in that some of them are like, yeah, you know what, right? This isn't my wheelhouse. I will focus on getting good performances, tightening the script, you know, all of these things, getting that those aspects really visually making it look. And, you know, so that, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. You know, I think ultimately there would be some level of balance. You know, I hear more good stories from people about the way Marvel works than bad, you know, and I think... Yeah. And I think they've got better at it as well. You know, I think the big one back in the day, and we will talk about this, I'm sure, when we do Ant-Man, but there was the whole Edgar Wright thing. And that seems to maybe be the worst experience. And maybe Marvel learned a lot from that in terms of, you know, he walked away, by all accounts, from what we know, because he couldn't make the movie he wanted to make. Yeah. And I thought that the first Ant-Man came out pretty well, considering. But I think everyone... Mm. Wonders what an Edgar Wright Ant-Man film would have looked like, and that it might well have been better, and I suspect it would have been. But you know, all of these things, you learn, everyone learns as they go, and they've been developing this universe and the way they work with filmmakers now for years, and I do think it is getting better, you know, in terms of the quality of the movies overall and the way they manage to take a lot of these directors and put them in these projects, and you still get to see what they can do, you know? So do you feel that with Shortland in this? Because, I mean, I don't know if you've seen any of her films. I admit I haven't. But do you feel that she stands out particularly in terms of what she does with this film?
I haven't seen any of her films, unfortunately. So I don't really have much to say about her her filmography and things. But, I mean... I don't know, it's difficult really, isn't it, to talk about what a director's brought to things, because they bring lots of stuff that you're not really aware of, you know, you only see the finished product, whereas a director's going through all of this, and they're like the kind of filter, aren't they, for everything. So, I mean, I enjoyed the film, it's a lot of that's down to her as director. She had final say, I'm guessing, on a lot of things. Great, but it's very difficult, isn't it, to say that the director specifically did this or they did that, because you know, if you're not involved in the process, you don't ever 100% know what they did, in a sense, or what was their idea and this kind of thing. So I'm sure maybe that will come out in future interviews and things, and you'll have more of an idea about what she actually brought to the table. I enjoyed the film, and she's a director of it, so all credit to her.
Same. I you know, from what we know, I think she does a good job. Just going back to mentioning Moonraker, because obviously, you know, we see Natasha watching it and quoting from it, you know, quoting Roger Moore, which I loved. And I've seen since, there was a good, by Mike Ryan for Uproxx, there was a good piece on, you know, basically why Moonraker's always been good and why everyone should, you know. And I said to him, yes, we need this to get its due, because I saw Moonraker at the BFI about 2 years ago with Carl Sweeney, who hosts the Movie Palace on this network. And we had such a great time with that film. Like, it is ridiculous, but I love so much about Moonraker. Do you think that they actively, in some respects, tried to put things in this film that were a bit Moonraker-y? You know, because I did find one or two things here that were quite Bond.
Yeah, well, by the end, isn't it? We're on like a flying fortress in the sky, you know, maybe not space, but in the air anyway. There's definitely some touchstones, isn't there, really. Every time they ever do anything like that in the film, I'm always thinking, okay, there's a reason they did that, there's a reason they chose that film, or why she's quoting that. So and it's normally because it's a direct influence in some way. I mean, they're just saying that James Bond film was a precursor to what they're doing now in the MCU, so it's like 40 years ahead of its time, I suppose, you know.
Yeah.
Which is good. But yeah, it was an interesting little call out, and like the villain we've got in this was maybe a bit of a Drax type, you could argue.
I think so. I mean, not anywhere near as well written, even as well performed. Michael Lonsdale in that film is one of the best Bond villains. He has some of the greatest one-liners for a villain you will ever hear. you know, such as "Take care of Mr. Bond. See that some harm comes to him." Just stuff like that. It's just like, oh, amazing. Whereas Ray Winston is, I mean, were no Russian actors available? Because his casting baffles me, to be honest.
It is a bit strange, isn't it? I don't know how they decide these things, really. I don't think you needed a big name. You didn't need a big name in there, did you, really? You could have had just... any kind of Russian actor he never heard of, really, just somebody new to bring in. Yeah, and he couldn't really get the accent, could he? It was very cockney. It was kind of wobbling all over the place, you know.
I am Moscow from Moscow.
It's called Moscow to Maiden Vale, wasn't it? All around the shop.
It was. It was proper. There were points where he was doing that, and then he'd be like this. Liz very much. Bless him. But I mean, he again, Dracov though, is a classic example of how 9 times out of 10.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The villains in these films are a bit crap, to be fair.
Yeah.
You know, I've always thought that DC nail villains as much as they do superheroes. You know, you get a lot, whether it's the Nolan films or the other Batman films or Superman films or whatever, I think villains in the DC universe are so much better than in the Marvel universe usually, because, you know, in these one-off movies, they're just always a bit rubbish, aren't they? And Dracov was just, you know, he's a low-rent Drax who runs, you know, trying to convince everyone that he runs the world through these widows. And he's very easily just blown up in a helicopter. And I was a bit like, yeah, what, you know, he's a functionary, isn't he? He's a means to an end. He's just somebody we need to have there to get to the point where all this is destroyed. You know, he's not in any way an interesting villain, really.
I think he was supposed to be like the brains of the operation, and Taskmaster was the brawn. I think that was maybe the idea. But I mean, Taskmaster is another discussion, isn't it? I don't know if you thought that was successful or not, what they did there. But yeah, well, so
I don't know. I mean, I don't know much about the character. You know, I've seen a lot about how people saying, "Oh, they did Taskmaster wrong," that all that, and I have no idea. I don't know really who Taskmaster is. I don't know whether it's always supposed to be Dracov's daughter. I suspect not.
I don't think, but I think basically the main problem is that he Taskmaster is a male, if that makes any difference to people, but I don't think it matters changing the gender so much. But it was more the fact that they're their own character. They're not like I don't think they're like a brainwashed daughter of a boss, you know, that kind of thing. I think that's all like a new invention. But yeah, for me, I'm not really that invested in Taskmaster, or I'm not too aware of the background. So for me, I've just accepted it for what it was. I thought it was quite a decent enough twist that it was like the adult daughter. But they just could have done more with that idea, because the idea being that Black Widow had thought she'd killed Dracov's young daughter a long time ago. And obviously she hadn't died. She'd been survived, and she'd been brainwashed and turned into Taskmaster, but it was a bit kind of, it was a bit flat, wasn't it? I think they could have done more with that background, so you really felt the emotion of that, because obviously Black Widow was quite emotionally upset by everything, but it was difficult to really feel that yourself, because you didn't really know that daughter character very much, did you? It was just a very brief flashback, so I didn't really care, and it seemed a bit of a waste of Olga Kurylenko as well, didn't it, really? Because again, it could have had any actress in that role. Why did they have to be a fairly big name, you know? A bit strange to have her there.
Yeah, I did wonder that. I was like, she gets like one line, I think, of dialogue, you know, and it's a bit...
Yeah,
odd. I mean, the way they set that up, they tried to reveal this big reveal when Taskmaster takes the head off, you know, helmet off and stuff, and it was a bit like, oh, okay, all right then. I mean, really, though, we should have seen it coming, because... In what world are they going to let Scarlett Johansson as Natasha murder a child? You know, Like, it's just not going to happen, is it? We should have seen this coming. As soon as we knew that that was what the red in the ledger was or whatever, you know, we should have gone, okay, well, she's obviously still going to be alive, you know, because Marvel are just not going to do that. You know, you how do you come back from that, really? And it's... But I don't know. I thought that the character itself was quite good in the helmet in terms of a threat, you know? I mean, at the beginning, when the Taskmaster and Black Widow are fighting, you know, when she's smoked out of her hidey space, I did get proper sort of Winter Soldier vibes there. You know, it felt very like when Bucky was fully conditioned, you know, and that was good. Not as good as that as Winter Soldier, to be fair. I mean, not many Marvel films are as good as Winter Soldier, I think, but you know, along those lines.
Yeah, it's a similar thing, wasn't it? Really having a threat that's just as good as you. Ultimately, because I think that was the idea of Taskmaster, wasn't it? He can mimic your fighting style, so no matter how good you are at your scissor kicks and whatever you can do, he can kind of do that, or she can do that as well. But they didn't really sell that very well, did they? A brief bit with his kind of I keep saying he, but with her visual display, kind of marking out the tracking of your body and things. And it was like, okay, yeah, that's what they can. She can do. She can kind of scan you and all this and that. I thought it was interesting. I thought actually it was a robot early on because of that.
Me too.
I thought it must be a robot or something. But it never really came into play, did it? Later on, it never really got a sense that skill was being used, really. Because I think in the MCU they all fight in pretty much the same style anyway, don't they? giving a supervillain the ability to copy someone else's style is not much of anything.
Yeah,
because they all fight to that same standard usually anyway.
They all do it. And I suppose maybe it's a way to try and increase the threat level to Black Widow, because ultimately she's not a superhero. You know, she can't do all of the big superheroic stuff. She's not superpowered. She's not like Steve Rogers. You know, she can't throw cars off buildings and all. You know, she can't leap tall bounds. She is restricted in many ways. And it's one of the reasons why at times I think as the MCU expanded outwards, sometimes it felt harder to place her involved in things, because you've now got these cosmic characters. You know, you've got Doctor Strange creating entire realities with the wave of his hand and all that. But where does Black Widow fit? And that's almost why this film seems old-fashioned now, in a way, because now we're at the point where, you know, next year we're going to have Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which is probably going to be the most cosmic bonkers thing you've ever seen in this universe. And it's a bit like, well, this is all quite lo-fi in many ways. So maybe trying to have, you know, create these sort of characters who can be a match for Black Widow is... I mean, I thought the best example of that from the whole film was when she fights Elena, actually, because they were completely evenly matched. And even though they only have one little fight, and it's not necessarily a deadly fight, but it was good. It crackled a bit because they were both, and there was some investment in that, because we knew that they were sisters.
Yeah, that was kind of what I thought Taskmaster would be like, to be honest, because you could definitely sense, couldn't you, that they were both as highly trained as each other, and they'd both gone through the same training. So, that was definitely good. I suppose after Endgame, maybe you can't really go much bigger than that. So maybe it makes sense to go smaller with a film like this. You could argue to get things more personal and smaller scale. I quite enjoyed the film for the fact that it was smaller stakes. I think that's quite a good thing. It doesn't always have to be like the end of the world in these kind of films. The threat was there, and it was fairly big by the end, I suppose, wasn't it? It was like hundreds of people have been brainwashed, and all these Black Widows all around the world, and manipulating governments and things, but ultimately the stakes were relatively small, which is good.
No, I think there's a place for both. There is a place for both. I think really though, the show is stolen by Florence Pugh as Elena. Like I thought she was great. I thought she had that balance of badass but also deadpan sort of humour that. The film itself struggled with. Like, quite often you get a lot of these, even the Captain America films were good for this, in that you managed to find humour and quite laugh out loud moments with those kind of quite straight-backed characters. I mean, I think one of the best laughs in the whole series is in Infinity War with the I Am Steve Rogers thing, which is just so funny, you know, and everyone howled in the cinema when that happened. But it's harder to find those moments with Natasha, because she is quite serious and she is quite intense. Whereas Elena doesn't have that, does she? You can imagine as she integrates more into the MCU that she'll be a bit deadpan and a bit snidey and a bit aside, have the asides. And Florence Pugh does that really well, I think.
Yeah. She's definitely a highlight, wasn't she? I got a bit confused because I thought, well, if she's been brainwashed all of her life, has she, until she was woken up, has she ever behaved as herself? I was a bit like thinking, you know, is this like her awakening? Is she always... No, her personality that you were saying was really fun and interesting.
Yeah.
Is she like that normally then when she was brainwashed? I thought I was under the impression that all the Black Widows were kind of like brainwashed zombies sort of thing. So I almost thought that it would have made more sense for her to be woken up and all of a sudden she's like... She doesn't really have a personality. She has to sort of learn how to be a person sort of thing. But you didn't really get that. She was immediately a bit of a spunky kind of younger, tougher... Scarlett Johansson type, you know, immediately kind of thing. So I don't know if that was just me, but I was thinking that during the film. I thought, okay, she's just like back to normal. She's just like a normal person now.
That's true, actually, because the suggestion is that she's probably brainwashed from the point she's taken by Dracov when they're like six, when she's like 6 years old.
Yeah.
And then she's put through the Red Room as she grows up. And then, she's just an assassin for the next 20 odd years.
So I thought
I hadn't thought of that.
So I thought it would make sense that she was quite immature, or she was almost like a child in a woman's body. And I thought they were going to go down that route where it would be like, you know, you've got Natasha as like an elder sister, and she's now confronted by her adult sister, who's almost like in her mind she's still the younger sister she remembers from Ohio all those years ago, and it's like a weird kind of tragic thing that's like a child almost stuck in a human's in an adult's body. And is like a highly trained professional killer. I thought they were going to do something with that, and they didn't really. She was just immediately an ordinary person, wasn't she? And for what Florence Pugh was given, she did it well, you know. And she definitely got probably the most laughs. I think she had most of the funniest lines and things. And she's definitely been groomed to be the replacement of Black Widow, isn't she?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Black Widow 2 100%. Will probably involve her.
yeah. And if and we'll talk about it later, but if the post credits anything to go by, you know, we're going to see her crop up in a few other things, I think, as well. But she was good. But you could make a very good point there, actually. That's something to think about, whether or not it was scripted that way, or they changed things, or, you know, it was just never considered. But that's... Yeah, that's interesting. What about the parents then? What about David Harbour as Alexei and Rachel Weisz as Milena? I thought they were a mixed bag. I like David Harbour a lot. I think he's a really good actor. He's been in so many good things. I mean, obviously beyond Stranger Things that he's great in. But you know, he's a real... I thought he was great in Quantum of Solace, which also had Olga Kurylenko. And he was a right shit in that. And I'd love to see him come back in the Bond movies, because that film is quite underrated anyway. I'm starting to realise that as time goes on. But that's another chat. but he's a good actor. I don't know. I just didn't really click with him, though, in this. I felt like he was a played-out joke quite quickly, and I found him quite grating. Yeah. But that might just be me, to be fair.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed him more than you then, I think, by the sound of it. I thought, he was played for laughs a bit. But he was kind of like a bizarre dad, wasn't he? Because he was pleased that his daughters have grown up to be killers and things. So it was all like a kind of twisted version of a dad, wasn't he, and that kind of stuff. And I got like lots of different things that he kind of evoked in me. It was a bit like Mr. Incredible from The Incredibles. I got some flashbacks to that with his suit that wouldn't fit. And early on as well, in the opening scene, it was almost like a little Incredibles family are not aware that they're superheroes or Russian spies. You know, there was a bit of a similarity there. But I thought he was decent. He got some of the laughs along the way. I think he was okay. They could have done more with him, I think. I wasn't entirely sure how powerful he was meant to be, because early on he's like throwing a vehicle away like it's nothing, and later on it's like he can arm wrestle people really good. And that's about the extent of it. So the power, I don't know if it's just he gets older, he's lost some of his strength or something, but he was flipping cars 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And now he's just arm wrestling people. So I wasn't entirely sure how strong he's meant to be. But he is a super soldier, isn't he, essentially? So he's kind of Captain America level person. So I don't know. I didn't really get much of a sense that he was much of a superhero or supervillain by the end, but he was entertaining to watch.
I was a bit confused by him in a way. Yeah, I think that, I mean, it was quite funny when he was trying to blag about how he'd fought Captain America, and then the guy says, he was still in ice when this was happening.
It's a bit, well, do you know, I've got something to say about that. I've heard nobody online talk about this yet, so I'm sure as soon as I finish this podcast, I'll find lots of think pieces about it, and it will seem like I didn't think of this myself. But I thought that what I thought when he said that, I think he's telling the truth. I think what's happened, this is quite a clever thing I think Marvel have done. I think what's happened is that in the 80s, when he said he was fighting Captain America, he was fighting Captain America, because Steve Rogers has gone back in time to the 40s to live with Peggy Carter, and that's his happy ever after. And he's existed, hasn't he, since then, to become an old man. So I think it makes perfect sense. I think it's made perfect sense that by the time he gets to the 80s, he's now a bit older, but he's still there. And somebody knows he's still around, and he's maybe had to reintroduce himself to the US government saying, look, I'm Captain America. I'm you know, there's a version of me that's frozen in ice, but I've done this time travel thing. I can't say much about it, but, you know, I can be like your deep undercover agent for certain things. And then somebody says, well, okay, well, the Cold War's on, and the Russians have got this guy called Red Guardian. Go and sort him out. And then you can get Chris Evans, and then in the future, you can get Chris Evans back into the MCU. It won't matter that he's aged. That's actually going to be appropriate.
It's part of the point.
For the character,
yeah.
Because he will have aged slightly. He'll be like 50s or something, I'd have thought, by the 80s, if my maths is good. So don't you think? And that's a way to get in the future without messing with things or spoiling the endings to Endgame. It would make sense.
Well, also, you wouldn't have to worry about the casting, because you would naturally have a younger actor play the David Harbour character at that point anyway. Yeah. Because he's younger. Red Guardian is younger. That is genius, Dan. You've hit on something there. You need to write that up.
I need to put this into an article or something. But I thought that's what they're going to do.
That's really smart.
Afterwards, I was looking online thinking, I bet someone's got some kind of article about this. And at the time that I looked, nobody had. And I thought, well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was like you said. He was just joking around, and somebody obviously said, that can't have happened because he's in ice. But I thought that's such a silly mistake for him to have made. You know, that kind of boast is obviously not going to work unless it is true. So I thought, I bet it's true.
The thing is, A, you need to write that article, right? Get on it, okay? But two, like, who else is he fighting? Because the idea is that he's supposed to be a Captain America-esque Russian version. And I'm sure in the comics, and again, I haven't read, but I'm sure the Red Guardian is a big menace to Captain America during the 60s, 70s, whatever, in the Cold War. So, and the idea is that he's one of those classic sort of faded Russian icons, you know, in that sense. And it tracks with a lot of how Marvel have explored that in the Captain America films, particularly. You know, and obviously, you know, the even in the comics, Bucky is brainwashed more by Russian agents and that kind of thing. But in this, it was Hydra and things like that. But and I think Melania even mentions Hydra at one point in this. You know, she makes that point. Mm-hmm. But I think, ultimately, it's still evoking Russia. It's still evoking the Soviet era. You know, the end of Civil War is set in like a missile silo, all this stuff. So that's very much coded in. So it makes sense for Red Guardian and for David Harbour to be playing this character. But who was he fighting? If he's supposed to be that sort of antithesis and Captain America didn't exist, it would be a brilliant twist to have had in the past Captain America secretly operating as an older version who was the time-travelling one, and that's how you bring Chris Evans back. I think that's a great idea, and they could do that in 20 years. So, love it. Kevin Feige, if you're listening, right, or you someone tells you about this, put it in a folder and do it, because that's a great idea. But no, I think he's... I think as a character, I think he is interesting. I don't know... I think maybe I'll like him second time around a bit more, actually. Maybe it's one of those things. When I watch this with my wife, which I will do at home probably at some point, I might like him more. And I think there's room for him to grow. I'd like to see the character again, and I'd like to see how they integrated him. Because, I mean, the suggestion is that we will. You know, he's still there at the end. We don't know what he's doing, you know, 5 years later or whatever. But the suggestion is that he's still around and that you could bring Rachel Weisz back as well. I don't know whether she was quite cast properly either in this, though. I mean, I like her. I think she's a good actor. But I don't know. I didn't understand why they didn't bring back Julie Delpy. Because Julie Delpy was in Age of Ultron, and she was the woman in the Red Room who we saw briefly in those flashbacks, and she was training Natasha and that kind of thing. Why not have it be her? She's a well-known actor.
Yeah,
like, she would have been really cool in this role, I think. I don't understand why they didn't do that.
Yeah, I'd forgotten she was in that film, to be honest. So, but yeah, it would have made more sense.
It's tiny. Yeah. And I always thought it made sense that they were laying her in, so eventually you get her play a bigger role in the, you know, but doesn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose they went for Rachel Weisz because she's a bigger name, I suppose. There's also a James Bond connection with her, isn't there? Because she's married to Daniel Craig. Yeah. So another Bond connection there. But yeah, I know what you mean. I thought she was a little bit... not my favourite of the new characters, for sure. I think maybe that's partly because the character's meant to be a bit icy and strange. So she was kind of playing that, but it came off as being a bit not interesting. I think she got better. I think by the end when she was more like... obviously a heroic figure by the end, helping... Natasha and Yelena. I think it was a bit more interesting at that point. I don't know really why they cast her. What was going on there? It wasn't much of anything, that role, was it? And I was a bit confused by it as well, because she was kind of introduced as like some kind of a dark character who's like brainwashing pigs and making them stop breathing and things.
Yeah, that's fucking
and
weird.
And then she's like a heroic figure, really. Well, you know, it seems a bit strange. Yeah. I was like, well, maybe stop your brainwashing side projects then. That's a bit dark and weird, you know.
Well, she was sort of suggesting that she was under Dracov's spell as well, but not fully. She it was the pheromone. I mean, I thought the pheromone thing was a bit daft, and that Natasha has to break her nose, to literally break her own nose to start. I was like, this is a bit ridiculous, even for you know, for Marvel. But like, the idea was that Milena was sort of trapped, wasn't she, by his pheromone. She couldn't kill him, but equally she had free will, so it was, it was a bit of a trade-off. She was in league with him, so she was a villain, really. She was helping him. You know, why didn't she think to break her nose? If it was that easy, why aren't they all just breaking their noses?
as soon as they mentioned pheromones, I did think about something like that happening. So when she smashed her nose on the desk to break it, I was like, I knew that would happen. I knew it. It was a bit, I got thoughts of RoboCop when that started to happen as well, with the Prime Directive thing. And he can't kill Dick Jones at the end. It was the same sort of thing. And then I think they must have known that as well, because she even says, doesn't she? She says, thank you for your cooperation at one point in that scene.
And I was like,
that's a RoboCop quote. So maybe there was a bit of an intention there. they sort of realised it was similar.
I'm sure there was, 100%, yeah. Yeah, I thought she was a character that was a bit all over the map. I didn't really, you know, I mean, all this stuff, I have a very strong, you know, I'm a big fan of this show, as you probably know, but I get very big Alias vibes from this whole plot, really, because Alias as a TV show was all about this. It was all about a Russian agent who was sent to America. She has a child with the guy that she infiltrates his life, and then she grows up to be a super spy and all this kind of thing. And then eventually they all start, it's this massively dysfunctional family who then start to come together, and they live in the world of spies and espionage. You know, and obviously that was again done in the Americans, you know, in a different way, more of a grown-up way, less pulpy. And so this is an idea that's been used quite a lot over the last 10, 20 years. This idea of a Russian, you know, espionage plot inside America. And I suppose the difference with this is that it felt to me very much about abusive fathers more than anything else. You know, Dracov is not just an abusive father to his own daughter, but to all of these women, you know. And then there's also the other side of it, the seedier side of him controlling free will and all this. There was a lot of ideas in there, but I don't know if they were really explored to the depth that I think would have been better in a TV series, maybe, in a longer story.
Yeah.
You could have really unplicked this.
Yeah, definitely. That's the thing, isn't it? Now we're getting the TV shows, we're sort of aware of their strengths a bit more. And I mean, it would have been good to see like the Black Widows doing something around the world, actually manipulating things and having an impact on a political situation somewhere. So we actually had a feeling of like, oh, this needs to be stopped. You know, it never really got that, did you? It was just more of a generic, oh, there's lots of people and they've all been brainwashed. We've got to give them the red mist antidote stop that. So, but yeah, some of the themes, with abusive male figures, definitely was interesting. That worked quite nicely, I suppose. But yeah, a TV show would have given it just more time to maybe just dive into areas of this a bit better. I'd have preferred a Black Widow TV series over the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, to be honest. I think I would have suited the character more, and it would have been more interesting. This storyline spread out over 6 episodes would have been really good. I think it could have worked really well. Whereas Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I thought it could have been like a, it could have been a film really, that maybe 4 episodes. It kind of was a bit stretched, and I didn't really like what they did with a few of the ideas that they had. But yeah, so a bit of a shame maybe.
I got a lot out of that, to be honest, but I agree. I think it was a bit, there wasn't enough story for 6. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And I think there could have been in this. And like I say, you throw in the Hawkeye stuff as well. I think you should have had Black Widow and Hawkeye as a combined TV show, and you could have done all this together.
Well, you could have done something quite clever, couldn't you, as well? You could have had like one episode or two where Hawkeye does come into the story. Even though I was against that in terms of him in the film, in a TV show that would have made sense, and a nice little episode cameo or something, and that could have like intersected with the Hawkeye TV show. So you have to watch the Hawkeye show to work out what he was doing when his storyline crossed paths. You could have done like a kind of clever thing there, and that would have been another way of the MCU kind of like creating this kind of tapestry, and everything's connected, and would have been quite interesting. But yeah, they didn't do that.
And you know, for whatever reason, you know, it might well be that they've obviously got different plans for, and everyone has their own ideas, don't they, of what would make a good story and all this, and you could do things various different ways, I guess. But no, overall, then, I mean, have we missed anything, Dan, before we go? Is there anything else that you thought of we could bring up, or have we covered it in general quite well?
Yeah, I think we've covered all the characters and the events that happened, and there's no real big surprises or anything, was there? There was nothing that's like worth discussing in that sense. It was quite a simple, straightforward story, you know. I think it was a bit of a shame it was all about mind control again, because that was obviously involved in Winter Soldier, like you mentioned, and it just seems that every time they deal with anything Russian, it has to involve mind control. You know, they seem to have just got a very cliched view of Russia, I think, which I'm sure lots of Russian fans watching these films, maybe they're all biting their tongue wanting to scream, because it's quite cliched, isn't it, how they approach it, and you know, the silly accents and things. So maybe if they return to this well, they need to do something a bit different next time they do one of these kind of more grounded MCU films, these kind of spy ones that they do. I think they have to drop Russia and move to something else. That would be my tip.
No, I agree. Give Russia a rest a bit, really. I think they've covered it now. They've dove into the well of this, into these tropes and these ideas, you know, and how, you know, you go down a whole rabbit hole of the kind of things this alludes to, you know, the MK Ultra sort of, you know, Russian kind of versions of that they were doing, and all this, even though it doesn't go into that conspiracy lore, you know, it all has a precedent. A lot of what they're doing in here has a precedent. But yeah, I think that's it now. They can leave that, put that to bed for a while.
And I mean, if you've got Hydra has infiltrated everything, hasn't it? So why do you need all these Black Widows infiltrating everything as well? It's like the same idea, essentially, isn't it? It's the same idea. Yeah. It's just Hydra or some Russian baddies infiltrating America. It's just a different take on that. Mm. It's almost like we've done that story with Hydra. They did that. Yeah, we're doing it. We're just Black Widows. They're all brainwashed. It's the same thing.
Yeah. It's kind of repeating itself, isn't it, really? But no, I think overall, I'd say this is mid-tier Marvel, as I say. I'd put it towards the middle-ish. Would you stick it there, Dan? Is that where you'd roughly aim this one?
Yeah. I mean, just talking about it now, sometimes it helps to talk about things, doesn't it? Makes you kind of focus your own thoughts, and you consider other things. Maybe that does have an effect sometimes. But yeah, I think it's middle of the road. I think the problem is that obviously the MCU has got so big that all the kind of big event films, like the Avengers films, they're all kind of like naturally at the top, because they're such big spectacles and such big ideas and things, and they're just a culmination of everything. They all kind of crowd the top, and then you've just got everything else is almost below that. There's almost no middle, really. It's just kind of like all that stuff at the top, and then there's everything else. Because everything else is like the foundation for the stuff at the top. It needs to exist to help the things at the top, but So it's difficult really to rank. It's definitely, this definitely wasn't a bad MCU film. I didn't hate it or anything. I didn't have too many problems with it. Should have maybe come out 10 years earlier, but but that's about it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Same. I thought it was perfectly good. I'd encourage anyone who likes Marvel to see it. Had some good set pieces, some decent moments. As I say, Florence Pugh, happy to see more of her again, particularly. She was great. So yeah, thumbs up, really. It's not great. It's not going to pierce the top layer, but a lot of fun. So and it's been fun unpicking it with you, Dan, and going through aspects of it. So so thanks for joining me for this, and you'll be back to talk, hopefully, to do an episode of What If, which is coming next month and fairly soon. Yeah. So that'll be great. We can get you back on the show for that. But until then, where else can people find you and what you're up to?
I'm the editor of a website called framerated.co.uk, which I also write for. So my Black Widow review is actually there right now, if you want to read that. I've pretty much said everything in that review that I've said here, but in less depth. So
not the Red Guardian stuff though. You've got to get that down on paper.
I didn't touch on that because I thought it was a bit too spoilery and things. To be honest, I thought everyone would know that. I thought it would be like a common theory.
You hit gold with that.
New article coming soon. But yeah, I'm on there and I'm on Twitter as well. So if you want to find me on Twitter, it's at DanOwen79.
Excellent. Okay, great. Well, it'll be great to have you back on this show and to catch you on other shows on We Made This as well and everything like that. So cheers. I'm at AJ Black Writer on Twitter. You can find links to all the other podcasts I'm doing on my own site, thetruthisinhere.co.uk, where I blog and write things like that as well. So, thanks for joining us, everyone, for another episode of Podcast 616. And remember, we're part of the We Made This Podcast Network, and Black Widow is not all we're discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what you might have missed on the network in a moment. Stay tuned for our post-credits discussion, and we'll see you next time on Podcast 616, where we remain burdened with glorious purpose to talk about Loki and the rest of the MCU.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Cerebral Jukebox.
She was like, okay, do you want to play spin the bottle with me? Now, as a 13-year-old, I was probably one of the most nervous wrecks on the face of the planet. I was like, well, I can't just like play. I'm not playing with like everyone says. I was like, oh no, like, can we play spin the bottle? I'm like, yeah, but that would just be, oh, Jesus, I'm just a kisser. So that's what happened.
Life's Milestones.
With me at this time is Alexa. Alexa, hello.
Hi there.
So, my first ever electronic guest here on Life's Milestones. Alexa, how old are you?
I'm as old as my tongue and a little older than my teeth. Or I would be if I had any. Sorry, I'm being silly. What do you expect from a 5-year-old? Thanks for being interested in me. Here's another fun thing. Try asking me to sing you a silly song.
Pretty Fly, a 90s nostalgia podcast.
In the modern day, the harmonica, it's a sophisticated instrument of class and distinction.
it's right up there with the harper's chord and, you know, the cathedral organ.
Did you just say the harper's chord?
Yes.
You mean the harpsichord?
I do mean the harpsichord. Thank you for that.
Like, hang on a minute. Did this guy just say harper's chord?
I did.
Oh, who's goodness. Sophisticated now?
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.
So we get one post-credit scene in Black Widow, not two, because they do the credits, don't they, differently. Like normally they put the title up or whatever, and then it cuts to the credits at the end, and then you get the credits, then you get maybe a post-credits, and then you get the rest of the credits, and then you get the final one at the very end. But this one just has the one you have to wait 10 minutes for. and you get it at the end, don't you? So
I very rarely stay for these, to be honest. I'm one of those weird people. Yeah, I'm one of those people that thinks, well, okay, I'll just read what happens, and I'll just leave immediately. I tend to do that, to be honest.
Well, fair enough.
I don't know why. But yeah, I just stayed for this one for some reason. I sat there for 10 minutes. I think everyone else did as well. And eventually got the end credits scene.
Well, at least you know, though, that one's coming. Like, some people leave and I'm not convinced they know. And I'm like, you surely have seen a Marvel film before. Come on, guys. This could be something else. Yeah. So what did you think of it? I mean, this obviously, like you said earlier, would confuse maybe a few people who had only watched Black Widow because he cuts to Natasha's grave. And you're like, what? things didn't work out on that jet, did it, Natasha? But and Elena's there and she's very sad. And then we meet, we see Val, don't we? The mysterious Valentina. Now, originally, Black Widow was supposed to come out before Falcon and Winter Soldier, which is the first place we've since seen Val when she recruits John Walker. And originally, this was going to be the first appearance of her. So, do you think this works? I mean, we don't really know much about her yet, so she's still a mystery. But do you think this works better or worse for coming after we first saw her in Falcon and Winter Soldier?
I think it works better coming after. Because if this had happened before we'd seen her in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier TV show, I would have just thought to myself, oh, okay, it's the lady off Seinfeld. I've got no idea who she is or what's going on, what her business is. I would have assumed she's a baddie by what happens and what she says. But yeah, it would have been a bit odd to me. I think it works better having some context for her.
I do agree. I think she does work better, actually, because now in Falcon and Winter Soldier, she sort of semi-explains a little bit of what she sort of hints that she's recruiting and she's got a group and they're up to something, and she talks about how things are going to get weird and we'll need a US agent and all this. So she's clearly got a group she's putting together. So to see her now rock up, and that she clearly already has a pre-existing relationship with Elena, and, you know, Elena's basically on a break and she's already working for Val. It's interesting because now it's like, okay, so what's going on? Like, who is she recruiting? What's she up to? And obviously she asks her to kill Hawkeye, because that's the big revelation at the end, that she's giving Elena the chance to avenge, quote unquote, Natasha for Hawkeye, because the man who was responsible for her death. Now, that's interesting, I think, because it's obviously talking about how in Endgame, Hawkeye was with her, wasn't he, when she falls from that cliff in Von Boromir. And are we then going to... Well, two things. Elena's already been confirmed for Hawkeye months ago. So we knew Florence Pugh was going to be in Hawkeye, the TV series, because that's already been announced. She was supposed to be in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, apparently. They filmed some scenes where she was supposed to be in it, but then they had to cut them because she hadn't appeared yet in Black Widow. My guess was that she would have been maybe with Val when she properly recruits John Walker, maybe. Or maybe she would have gone to John Walker first and then took her to Val, perhaps. So, and we'd be like, who's this mysterious Russian woman, you know? Oh, no, well, we would have known by then, wouldn't we? We'd have known who she was, actually, because Black Widow was already out. So ignore that.
Yeah.
That's Elena. Like, what's she doing?
Yeah.
So, this obviously is teeing up Hawkeye. And are we then led to assume that Hawkeye will partly be about him trying to come to terms with not saving Natasha's life in Endgame?
Well, if it is about that, then all these TV shows are very somber in theme, aren't they, really? It's all about people grieving the losses of others, and it's all quite downbeat. So, I presume it's going to be about Hawkeye being upset about Black Widow's death and maybe blaming himself. And then he's going to have Yelena turn up and kind of confirm all of his guilt, you know, so he's going to kind of agree with her, I'm guessing, and be like, yeah, you're right, I deserve to die. And she's going to really chew him out for that. And then at some point he'll get over it, I'm guessing. And then he's going to pass the torch on, isn't he, to his protege.
Kate Bishop.
Played by Hayley Stanfield, isn't it?
I think she's good. She's a good actor. That's going to be good to see her. So maybe it will be, originally Elena's partly the baddie in Hawkeye, and then my guess would be that, because we know she's not a baddie ultimately, my guess is that Val will play more of a villain role in Hawkeye. It might even be where we properly understand who she is in Hawkeye, maybe Hawkeye and Yelena then have to team up to take down Val or her organisation. And maybe we'll see John Walker in Hawkeye as a result. Maybe we'll have those two fighting US Agent in there.
Yeah, it'd be strange if we don't see him. I'm just thinking about it now. But then maybe they're just laying the ground for a film, like you say. So in the films, we'll see them all together. She's kind of creating her own kind of, you know, anti-Avengers kind of group. So maybe we'll see that in a film at some point, you know.
Isn't the Thunderbolts, I think it's called, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a comic called Thunderbolts where it's bad guy Avengers, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know if there'll be like a... Maybe there won't be like a dedicated film for that. It'll just be... There'll be like a... Like they did with Captain America Civil War. There'll be somebody else's film that this feeds into, and it'll be like it's practically an Avengers film. And it'll have...
Well, might that be Captain America 4 that they've announced?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's probably the perfect place for it, isn't it? So that's where you'll get all of this come together. So the TV shows are partly seeding that a little bit. So, yeah, so you'll get US Agent and you'll get Yelena as the kind of Black Widow. Maybe you'll even get Red Guardian. Maybe he'll come back.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And then you've got either Hawkeye and or Kate Bishop as well. So they're all, like, involved in the same thing. That's all going to connect. I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it? Because they're all the lower-powered characters, for the most part, aren't they? They're all the characters who are just very skilled. So it makes sense to lob them all together and then leave all the cosmic stuff with Wanda and Doctor Strange and, Thor and all those guys, and then just bring them together, presumably, for maybe another Avengers movie down the line, eventually, where all of this stuff starts to come together. Who knows? But and I mean, there's loads of other characters to come yet. We've got Eternals coming. We've got Shang-Chi, and he will no doubt weave into it at some point as well. You know, so there's tons. I mean, who knows?
and
that's exciting.
And that's not even talking about the other TV shows. You got She-Hulk and Moon Knight and all kinds of stuff coming.
Yeah. It's exciting. It's a great time to be a fan of this stuff because I'm very keen to see where it all goes. So anyway, right, it's time to go. You need to go and write that piece about Red Guardian.
I'll do that now.